Hello and welcome back to the ring. I, of course, am your host, the one and only Dr. B.O.B., and with us, as always, is the attorney to those who need one, the defendant's attorney, the man that will get you off even if you've been caught with your hand in the cookie jar, the one and only Rob the Lawyer. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing well, and that intro could have gone in several directions, but I'm glad where you took it.
Yeah, I didn't know where I was going with that one.
No, I just heard off and your hand caught in, like, oh my god, where is he going with this?
You just made me have a spit take. I got water all over my computer screen.
That's what was happening on my end. I'm like, where is he going? Where is this going to end? It was a fun roller coaster. I enjoyed it.
But all right. Anyway, we're here. So you're doing all right today. That's good. That's good. No storms. Yeah.
It's storming out, but it's not like it's just rain. It's not thunderstorm. Thank God.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Nothing here. We haven't had any rain in a while. Not that I want to chat about the weather, but it has been. It's bad for my plants, man. I like my bushes and my flowers to get rain, so our yard is nice and pretty. We do enough work on it, it should look good.
Yeah,
we spend enough time out there that Mother Nature could at least give us, you know, a day of rain. Anyway, I'm in a good mood. We're headed to the beach tomorrow, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, going down to St. Simon's, a little island off of the coast of Georgia, over by Brunswick, just north of Savannah, I believe. So we'll be there for about 5 days total, I think.
Well, that's nice. Good little getaway. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. That's like it. Lots of good restaurants there. That's one of my favorite things to do on vacation. And Amy's a huge beach fan. And I like the little area downtown where you can go to the kitschy little shops and look at artwork that's way overpriced, and be like, oh, that's nice, turn it over and you look at the price and you're like, it's not that nice.
No, it's nice. It's not $5,000 nice, or yeah. $500 nice.
I would love to have this wooden sculpture of an octopus, but I don't have $2,500 to just throw down on it, and then how would I get it home?
Exactly.
But so anyway, we're here to talk WCW. We do have a couple of. Do you want to do the news stuff before or after we do the review?
I'm all for. We can do it now.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and do
it. Now. That's always been our format. Let's just stick with the new stuff.
All right. So first up, I wanted to talk about the big news. Everybody, you know, it kind of hit everybody by surprise, and it got me a lot more emotional than I thought it would. Maybe it was because, you know, the documentary just came out, but Iron Sheik passed away.
Yeah.
Was that yesterday as we're, wasn't it? That was Wednesday.
No, it was yesterday. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So just yesterday, old Sheiky baby passed away, 81 years old. Probably the greatest gimmick heel in wrestling ever. Definitely the greatest foreign gimmick heel or up there. You know, I'm obviously partial to Ivan Koloff, but, or not Ivan Koloff, but yeah, Nikita. Yeah. But I think Sheiky's definitely, he's more of a pop culture touchstone than most people know. Iron Sheik, don't know Ivan Koloff. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
No.
Thoughts?
Yeah, when I saw the post, I had to read it. I literally read it three times because it just wasn't clicking in my head who was being mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I literally saw him tweet or a tweet of his the other day, and I'm like, is this a joke? Is this I was looking to see if it was a fake account. And then I, you know, as I'm scrolling through everything, I see WWE puts it up. I see a bunch of, you know, like, I think TMZ picked it up. Mm-hmm. And I was floored. I mean, he was before when I, you know, my time when I was watching, before I got into wrestling. But like you said, he is just he's literally like a, like, I don't know if icon's the right word, but he's definitely on the forefront of pop culture. People know the Iron Sheik. People mm-hmm. have heard of him. And it could be because of his, you know, involvement with Hogan and everything. But, you know, people are aware of him.
Oh, yeah.
Even in the last few years, he was like almost like a meme, basically, on the internet with his, you know, all his...
fuck the Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I humble you. I put you in the camel crouch, brace your back, and humble you.
Yeah. And it's just like...
Yep.
I read it. I'm like, okay, to my knowledge, he wasn't sick. He didn't have any, you know, demons. And yet it was just like, it came out of nowhere.
Oh, he had beat most of his demons or put them behind him because he was a heavy.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most people, his nephews were the ones who ran the Twitter account. It wasn't actually him. But, of course, he had their permission. They were running it in his gimmick, you know. But he had become, you know, again, a pop culture touchstone, I guess would be the best. That's a better word for it. A whole new audience had come to know him through the Twitter account. And then, you know, like I said, A&E had just done the biography on him. That was one of the last ones that they did of that round of WWE biographies. And it was really good. If you haven't seen it and you're out there in the audience, go watch it. It was fantastic. He was big right when I started. I had the Iron Sheik LJN, the solid plastic one. I had a bunch of those, but the Iron Sheik was one of the first ones I got because he was Hulk Hogan's big adversary, you know, and that was in the very early 80s. I think I was like maybe like 4 years old, and it was like he was on the cartoon, and the cartoon was huge. I know most people are like, oh, but Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling was huge. That was a Saturday morning, you know, must see, or at least for me it was.
I used to watch that all the time.
So it was he was something, and like I said, he was one of the best foreigner gimmick heels because he went in with it. You know what I mean? And he never really turned babyface ever. You know, it wasn't until he was
the perpetual heel. I mean, you had guys like Piper who were, you know, amazing as a heel, but I mean, he had a few babyface runs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of one. I mean, maybe him winning didn't he win the gimmick battle royal from like a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that was the closest he had to a face run.
Really?
I mean, it really
was. Even
then, he was like treating it as a heel because I think he eliminated Slaughter or something like that. So, I mean, he had that.
He couldn't take the bump to go over the top rope.
No.
Yeah. So that's why he won the battle royal. He won the battle royal because he couldn't take the bump. Literally, nobody could get him over safely, so he could take the bump. So that's why he won. But
I think that was the closest he had to a face, angle.
Yeah, that was his redemption arc right there.
Yeah.
But So I mean, again, the Iron Sheik, an icon in the wrestling industry, definitely. So I still need to go back and watch his Hall of Fame speech because apparently it's supposed to be one of the best ones ever. But in honor of the Iron Sheik, I ran number one USA. Fuck the Hulk Hogan. Moving on.
You know, real quick, I will just say this. So like when you talked about Hogan's rock and roll, I forget the full name of the
rock
show.
And wrestling.
Rock and wrestling. That was, you know, like, I didn't watch wrestling at the time, but I watched that show. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew who Hulk Hogan was. And when I would watch WCW before he was part of it, I'd be like, where is Hogan? Because I didn't realize back then when I was a kid that there were two different promotions or, you know, multiple promotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I knew the Iron Sheik. I knew of Hulk Hogan. I knew of Andre. I knew of all these people.
Yeah.
And it was mostly through that cartoon. So when you talk about them being, you know, in pop culture, I mean, that really was a lot of people's introduction. If you didn't watch wrestling, you still knew who Hulk Hogan was.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knew him, you knew his, you know, his associates based on the cartoon.
Yep.
So, you know, like for me, that was like my first introduction to the Iron Sheik. And then, you know, when I got more involved in wrestling, I guess, or more focused on it as an entertainment medium for me, you know, I'd watch old tapes from Blockbuster, and I'd see the Iron Sheik taking on Hogan, and you know, it was just that was just how I became introduced to him. And it was just, you know, I'm just you know, I guess it was just it's just a shame that I wasn't there for his, like, you know, his big runs, like, you know, as they were happening.
I agree. I'm yet another person that I'll never, not that he was doing any fan fests or anything now, but you know, it'll always be like, man, I wish I had gotten into doing this stuff 10, 15 years ago when he was still doing that. You know what I mean? And going around so I could get his autograph, so I could have gotten his autograph or met him or, you know, whatever.
You know, don't get started on that one with me, because that, I have so many regrets.
Yeah.
So many. You know, Randy Savage, Roddy Piper, Vader. And this is, I'll tell a quick story about Vader. So he was at the WrestleCon for WrestleMania 33.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to meet him, but I was stupid. I didn't have, I was like, oh, I don't have anything for him to sign. So I'll just do it next year. Then he passed.
Yeah.
And I have been kicking myself ever since. And, you know, it's like, now if I go to a convention and it's like, I have nothing for them to sign, I don't care. I'm getting a picture. I'm going to get an 8x10, something.
Well, yeah, they usually always have never know. Something there at their table.
Oh, yeah, he had 8x10s, but I was like, oh, I wanted to get a figure signed.
Yeah. Yeah. I know how that is.
You know, I was stupid, you know, wish I could, if I could do it over again, I would have met Vader, because he literally terrified me as a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an adult, I realized he did his job.
Mm-hmm.
He played his role perfectly. And, you know, I wish I could have met him. It pains me that I never met him. It pains me that I met Macho Man or Piper, but to have the opportunity to meet Vader and then just completely bypass it because I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
That hurts. That's something I'm always going to regret.
Oh yeah. I mean, I understand. Yeah, I've got a lot of those actually, because I went to Dragon Con for years and never went down to the little celebrity area where they all are to get stuff signed. And again, was like, oh, I don't have anything for them to sign, not knowing that they all have at least pictures there, 8x10s, you know. But unless, like, when I went, like when I was at the Fanboy Expo in Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, I bought a DVD, Ricky Steamboat DVD. And of course, he signed it. He signed it twice, actually. He signed the cover and then he signed the inside of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because he's a super nice guy.
He really is. I haven't met him yet, but he is, you know, everything I hear about him is just tops.
And I wish I had known more about the business, as much about the business as I do now, then, because Val Venus was there and he had no line. And I was like, oh man, I bet you he would have had at least a story or two, something, you know what I mean? Because he seems like the type of guy that would interact with the fans.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, I knew who he was. I knew the gimmick and I thought the gimmick was stupid. I didn't realize how good of an in-ring worker he was, any of that. You know what I mean?
Him at the time. Yes. Yeah.
So it kind of just is what it is. But,
You know, speaking of meeting people, if you ever get the chance, like, I went to, this is going back a few years, and when Sting was first starting to do the tours, I met him in Philly at the old ECW arena.
Mm-hmm.
When I was walking around there, I ran into Joey Styles and Raven, who had booths next to each other.
Yeah.
They have a wealth of knowledge and they're very friendly. Yes. I mean, I haven't heard stories about Raven or Joey Styles, so maybe I caught them on a really good day, but they will chew your ear off. So if you ever want to meet somebody, my suggestion would be, if you want to hear some good ECW stories or just like ins and outs about the business, talk to those two.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
And they will play off each other really well.
Oh, yeah. JJ Dillon likes to talk as well. Okay. Moving on. Tickets in attendance. I saw a picture, I'm sure you've seen them going around too, of Dynamite last night. Or Wednesday night. Yeah, I guess that was last night.
It was last night.
Where the arena is half empty. And I know, remember I said, I was like, oh, show me SummerSlam. Show me, you know, WWE doing this. Here's the thing. The pictures from SummerSlam, that was SummerSlam, what, 2022? When Bayley and Io came back?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So that was pretty much like we were still coming out of the pandemic a little bit, if I remember correctly. Even then, I mean, they obviously booked a stadium that they couldn't fill up. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why half of it was roped off. That's going to happen. It doesn't happen every freaking taping. Same thing with that SmackDown picture. Like, yeah, but it is common practice to move people away from the hard cam side into the side facing the hard cam to make the place appear to be more full. That is common practice. True. I will grant you that. Here's the thing. It happens consistently with AEW, almost every show. Number two, when WWE says that it's full and you pan around to the hard camera side, that hard camera section is full. You know, because I've been every WWE event I've been to in Atlanta, the house is packed. I've sat on that hard cam side, sat almost on top of the hard cam before. So yeah, it might be common practice to move people around, but it doesn't happen every damn taping. And that's all I've got to say about that. Cause it annoys me that people are still like on about this because I said WWE didn't do that. Okay. Well, WWE doesn't make
it's not a common practice for WWE.
It is more rare for that side to be empty in WWE than it is for that side to be full for AEW, if that makes sense. Yes.
Yeah.
What's the other thing? Oh, Forbidden Door is coming up for AEW. No one cares. No one cares about your shitty Japanese promotion. Danielson versus Okada. Nobody knows who Okada is except for New Japan fans, and they already watch AEW.
Well, I know Okada only because he was TNA's answer to Okada. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, hey, that's the most I know about him. I mean, I know he's won some. I don't know. I know he's like the New Japan Pro Wrestling champion, right? That's what's happening right now.
I don't know if he's the champion or not, but he's like their
G1 climax thing. I don't know if that's a thing. If that was him.
Yeah, he's kind of their like ace, like their big dog or whatever, the top guy in the company.
So he's their
like their Roman Reigns, essentially
2020 Nakamura, basically, or 2018 Nakamura.
Yeah, essentially. Okay.
Gotcha. So he's their big guy there.
Yeah, but nobody watches New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's gotten like nobody watches it now, even worse than nobody watched it before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Like more people were watching it when I first got into it in around 2016, 2017 than are watching it now. So that's happening. A couple things happened on Raw this week that I wanted to complain about.
Okay.
First of all, they had a continuity thing that really, really pissed me off. They did the backstage.
The Alpha Academy thing?
Yeah, the backstage segment with Alpha Academy. And immediately after the backstage segment, which was obviously pre-taped because they were all Chad Gable was wearing something completely different than what he was wearing when he came out. Plus, there was zero time between the time the segment happened and when they came out for him to have gone and talked to Adam Pearce and had the match made official. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that should have happened probably even just one or two segments beforehand, and it would have been perfect. It would have made sense. But
did they have anything on? Like I didn't catch Raw this week, but I saw just like highlights. Did they have anything on that segment that said previously or like earlier tonight?
No, because Byron.
That's a big botch.
The first thing Byron Saxton says is he mentions something about what happened in the previous segment, but he doesn't say specifically what happened. It was just like, oh, how about that? Blah blah blah. Now, I'm trying to catch a moment with Chad Gable and Alpha Cat. You see what I'm saying? It was just
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was so just like, are you kidding me? Like,
that's weird.
Then when I found out that Vince was there moving stuff in the around on the show, I was like, well, that's probably why.
Yeah,
because you know, you don't need, they don't need, we don't need believability, pal. That and the whoever, which I guess it was Vince or Triple H, I don't care who it was, I really don't. I'll criticize either of them. Whoever's idea it was to put Enshavir or whatever their name is, the tag Veer team, and... Veer,
yeah.
The Jinder Mahal's tag team,
yeah.
Up, do have them do not even a squash match, just like a squash like thing in the ring,
yeah.
Right before the freaking main event, like it just killed the crowd. Like it literally
really bad pacing.
It really just like completely killed. It was dead at the start of that match, which. I mean, they ended up getting it back because it's Seth Rollins and Damian Priest, but they didn't. I'd like to think that if the crowd were a little bit hotter before the match started, that they could have had a better reaction towards the end of the match than they did.
Yeah.
Because they had to work to get them back instead of work to keep them going, which is a lot easier. But anyway, that's my rants for this week. Did you have anything egregious that happened?
No, I mean, other than I thought we would have touched base a little bit on the CM Punk ticket sales issue.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's really it. I mean, yeah, he's selling out in Chicago, but he's not doing much for the other areas. But, you know, my thing with that is it's because you don't know how long he's going to be around.
Well, you don't know how long he's going to be around.
I don't think he's not a draw. He may not be a draw on the level of a Roman Reigns or a Hulk Hogan or, you know, in their respective eras, but he's a name. People know him. People for some reason like him. He really lives up to that theme song. But you know, if I'm a CM Punk fan, I'm not going to buy tickets for an event 3 months down the line on the off chance that someone looks at him funny and he goes running back to AJ Lee.
Yeah.
I'm not going to invest my money. Cause I mean, that if, you know, look at it this way. If that's the only reason I'm going to be going to a show, I'm not going to go. It's not worth it. I will buy tickets the day before, but I'm not going to waste my time buying now. I'm not going to sink. What is it? $50 to go to an event or, I mean, to get the cheap seats there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it should be less than that. It was last time I went to a WWE event. I think they were $40, and they were nosebleed seats. They weren't great seats, but
yeah. I mean, I'll wait to my my Burger King combo deal to get a
your AEW Happy Meal.
Yeah, exactly. But my point is, like, you know, people are like, he's like, you know, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that if he was consistent. And not basically an Austin Aries kind of guy where he mm-hmm. just does his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
He probably could have boosted a lot of ticket sales. But,
well, there's, you know, also
there's no faith in him. Well, I'm not going to waste my time on it.
Yeah, there's also the fact that because Tony Khan refuses to get them in a room and have them squash their little beef because his friends who play wrestle still have their feelings hurt. He split the audience now, you know,
that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Buck fans don't want to go to CM Punk's show because CM Punk hurt our pretend boyfriend's feelings, and Punk fans don't really have much interest. Probably didn't have much interest in seeing the Bucks to begin with, but now they really have no interest in going to, you know, the Bucks only AEW show.
Yeah.
So, and if I were Tony, in all honesty, I would find smaller arenas. I'm sorry, but get a 1,500 to 2,000 seat arena. You know, I hate to say that because, you know, you want to think you're big time, but I would rather see an arena, a full arena of 2,000 people than a 4,000 seat arena that's half full. Does that make sense?
Yes.
and it's going to, you know, because it just, it looks Bud Show. It looks Outlaw. It looks like, it just looks bad. It looks bad on the company all ways around. I'm sorry, AEW fans. but it does. It, I mean, hell,
no, you're 100% right. And, you know, like in its dying days, even not even its dying days, in the last like 2-3 years, WCW was running events in smaller venues and it looked good on TV because mm-hmm. they didn't have, you know, places tarped off. I went to the Bash at the Beach that was in the, I think it was the Daytona Beach Convention Center. It was the night Hogan was supposed to face Jarrett for the world title, and then Hogan walked out, or sorry, Jarrett walked, you know, laid down. Then you had Jarrett versus Booker T, and Booker T won his first, WCW championship. The place was packed.
Yep.
I mean, mm-hmm. it was a small arena, but when you're, you know, when I was there, it was like maybe 14, 15 at the time, maybe 16. It didn't feel small. You know, it felt, you know, that intimate setting basically felt like made the whole show, and the show was not great to begin with, but it made the show a lot more enjoyable because it was like, you know, you could feel the crowd react to everything and just came across better. I never watched it on, I think I've watched a few matches just to see if I was there during certain events.
Yeah.
And I found myself a few times.
Yeah.
But. You know, it looked, it came off pretty good in TV. I mean, it wasn't like, you could tell it wasn't a stadium, mm-hmm. but it still came out pretty good.
Well, look, Center Stage in Atlanta. I know they went there a lot. Center Stage is tiny. Like it is very small. It is not a big venue at all. It's basically a theater.
Uh-huh.
That place looked good on television for a TV taping. Because wasn't that where Armstrong and Liger had their first match? Or not Liger, Armstrong and Muda? Wasn't that match at Center Stage?
I think so.
So, I mean, and it looks good because it's got the stadium-style seating. And if you shoot it right, you know, the whole screen's filled up with people. So, yeah, it's a smaller venue. But if you pack a smaller venue with people that actually want to be there, you're going to get better reaction. And
exactly.
You know, I mean, I know you want to fill them the best you can. You want to have the biggest gate you can have, but you got to work towards that. And at this point, AEW has fallen off, you know, yeah. and all of the, they've played out all the places that they were going, that they were selling a lot of tickets beforehand, mm-hmm. and they don't have enough big stars to go into a new, you know, a new location and sell it out because yeah. people, you know, who at AEW or is somebody who, you know, might not really be a wrestling fan with, who are they going to buy a ticket to go see? It's not going to be the Young Bucks or Omega because chances are they don't know who that is, you know?
Yeah. And it's not going to be a guy like Sting who is a name, but because he's, you know, he's only, I know he wrestles, but I think he only wrestles in the big events.
Yeah, and he's not even there every week. So yeah. Danielson, you know, that's really the only, besides Punk, that's the only other big name that somebody that doesn't follow AEW might actually know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got an uphill battle. And as I've said before, it's been 3 years. Tony Khan's booking has not gotten a iota better. If anything, no. I think it's gotten worse. Because he doesn't have anybody like Cody or Arn Anderson there to, like, he doesn't listen to anybody else. So I think, you know, it's going to limp along. I've said this before. I said it in another chat. AEW is going to limp along till they become Impact's biggest competitor. And that's what it's going to be. And I know nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to say that, but that's pretty much what it is. It already looks more like TNA than WWE.
100%.
especially when you have, you know, Samoa Joe and Jeff Jarrett and Sting and
I mean,
all those guys.
Jeff Jarrett's entire team right now it's like the old TNA. Jay Lethal, mm-hmm. Sanjay Dutt. I don't know who else is there because I stopped watching.
Zippy the Pinhead, but he wasn't on TNA. He doesn't do anything anyway.
Yeah. You know what's funny? We were talking about all these people. Like, who would you know? We completely bypassed Jericho. I mean, he was...
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that just shows you how much they're doing. They're not building new stars. Like, I didn't realize this Four Pillars match thing storyline was for the world title. Like, I look at Darby Allin and I think, what is he competing for? He's the world title? Why? Same with Jungle Boy and who was the other guy?
Sammy Guevara.
Yeah. These guys, when I look at them, I think, okay, these guys look like they belong. If you could just put them and place them in history anywhere. In WCW dying days, when they were doing like revamping the Cruiserweight division with Evan Courageous, Shane Helms, mm-hmm. Jamie Noble, bunch mm-hmm. of guys who were very green and, you know, could put on, you know, could do flips and all this stuff, but also hurt themselves in the process. Like when they had Jimmy Yang, you know, try to do there was a really bad ladder match between the Young Dragons 3 count and Noble and Courageous. And mm-hmm. like, it was so bad that people were just, they would literally do like corkscrew planches onto a ladder. No one was laying there. They just jumped on a ladder. I mean, it was bad. And, but I feel like if you would have put make a picture of all that entire roster of just those individuals from the new Cruiserweight division, and you threw in Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara and Jungle Boy, you wouldn't bat an eye. You'd be like, yeah, they were there. Yeah. That's how they came across before they got thrown into this main event picture.
Yeah, it was 205 Live versus MJF.
Yeah, I had no idea these guys were even like on the, you know. Like, it just seemed like a thrown together match because to me, it's like, why are they here?
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to Tony Khan not being able to make Darby, talent.
Darby's the best one of the three because yeah. he actually, like, on his dives. I mean, yeah, he's going to be in a wheelchair by the time he's 40, probably, but he throws himself around the ring. He doesn't, like, I don't know. He is who he is. He's believable as a mopey, you know, angst ridden. You know, weirdo.
Yeah, I guess.
You know. But still kind of pissed off at him for beating up on Gigi Dolan. I'm sure she never did anything to deserve that.
Yeah.
You know, but anywho.
We should stop talking about him. I don't like, he's just, he gets way too much praise for being pretty much scum.
Yep. There you go. Well, but, you know, it is funny we're talking about these small venues, right?
Yeah.
Because this week we're reviewing a television show that takes place in a television studio that had maybe, what would you say, 50, 75 people in there at the most?
Yeah.
So
50 at the most. I think it's a small studio. Probably maybe. I mean, if they got to 100, I'd be amazed.
So you're figuring 50 people there, and they were loud. For this episode of WCW from January 21st, 1987. Did you like that?
Oh, yeah. Good segue.
This is a good episode, man. I really liked this.
Work rate and everything.
This was, you know, there was some stuff we were talking about last week. And I was just like, then when they were doing the billboarding for the show, I was like, God damn, we just said we wanted to see that match. So
yeah.
Good for them. They set it up. They set us up to want to see it. And then we saw it. So you ready to get into this?
I am.
All right. See, we open up with a cold open with the Midnight Express attacking Ronnie Garvin and Barry Windham. Mainly attacking Ronnie Garvin because that's their target right now. Then we get the intro, then the billboard, the show, and I put down, we got some big matches tonight. Then Jimmy Garvin comes out to take on George South. I was glad that Jimmy got some new gear and he wasn't wrestling in his old gear. I put that he was working the haymakers. I don't know how he did it, but Jimmy Garvin was working these punches that came all the way back from like last week on George South and like making him look just fantastic without ever touching George South. Let's see, hits the brainbuster. Then he goes into the promo and this popped me. He tells Tony Schiavone to tell his mom. So he says, Tony, tell your mom to stop calling me and asking me who I'm going to be taking on. I don't know. Hello?
Here.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I thought that was hilarious. Tell your mom to stop Garvin. Calling me.
Garvin is just so full of life and like character. I can't tell if he's a heel or a face at all because just the way he's like acting. My assumption is he is a
he's supposed to be a heel.
Is a heel because he's just so cocky and arrogant. But he is just so like he is just a character, and he can wrestle, which is even better. But he is just really good at what he's doing.
Yeah, he is 100% who he is. I think he put over Jim Crockett Promotions. But yeah, tell your and then he's like, she's calling me late at night. it's funny to me. It makes me laugh. But yeah, Jimmy Garvin is absolutely just a character 100%, a bigger, larger than life character in the best sense of the word as far as wrestling goes. Because he's not, it's not like a WWE cartoon character. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, you know somebody like Jimmy Garvin if you've lived in the South for any number of years. You know a guy that's, you know, loud and boisterous and he's always laughing, but you know, I don't know, goofy. Anyway, we go to break, we come back, we get a Brad Armstrong promo, and he says that Tully Blanchard is in for the roughest 10 minutes of his life because we are getting Tully Blanchard versus Brad Armstrong tonight. I thought this was a great promo by Brad. It felt real. He felt fired up and angry and ready to, you know, like prove something.
Oh yeah, short and sweet, got the point across as to what he wanted to do. He wants retribution and he's gonna, you know, he's fired up. Mm-hmm. It's all you need for a babyface. It was perfect.
So then we get Ron Garvin versus Gary Royal.
Was Gary Royal in last show? Like, I feel like he was facing Brad Armstrong. He just looks like that guy.
He might have been.
Sure. Does he have like dirt on the promoters? Because this is like the second week in a row where this guy is not squashed.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? He's getting offense in, not great offense, but he's, you know, he's looking somewhat more than just a sack of potatoes for someone to get over on.
They might have been thinking that maybe he was a guy that, you know, might go to another territory to maybe do something. I don't know,
but Garvin looked good. Garvin, man, he stretched him all over the place. He had him in like a modified, I don't know what it is, like a half crab plus an arm bar. And I'm like,
oh yeah, yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he stretched him from his one side of the ring to the other. Like yeah, literally.
Let's see American Dragon do that. I mean, this looked more you know, dangerous than his, what was like that cattle mutilation movie uses.
Yeah.
This one looks like it. That one looked like it hurt, and it was just so simple. He's just standing up and bending them backwards.
Oh yeah. Well, wow. Didn't he at one time have like his foot on one hand and he had him in an arm bar? Yeah, he had his foot in one hand and he had him in an arm bar that did not look like a traditional arm bar. Yeah, and then he picked up his foot and he was stretching his foot like a crab. Yeah. Yeah, Garvin laid it in too in this match.
And then he wins it with a punch.
Yeah.
Knockout punch.
He no-sold some of Royal's punches. I like that he was fired up. Looked like he was aggressive. And I like it when Garvin is aggressive like that because it makes it better. But yeah, that's like what I said on Twitter. He'll stretch the guy for 10 minutes and then win it with a punch.
Yep. It's beautiful. It was just beautiful. And it looked like the punch looked legit.
Oh yeah,
I'm assuming it was a worked punch. I don't think he was actually trying to kill the guy, but it looked like a good punch.
Oh yeah, no, he does a great job because he hits him. If you look at it, he hits him like kind of he lances off their forehead with the bottom of his fist. But the way he throws the punch, you can't fucking see it. Like you really got to be looking for it. And of course, Gary Royal does a great job of selling it too because he almost turns all the way around, just falls flat. So yeah, it was a good, and then Garvin delivered a promo and he's fired up talking about Jim Cornette, which was, you know, again, this is the thing, we're getting these, we're back into having, because when Magnum went down, all the storylines had to be completely readjusted.
Yeah, you know? Revamped and everything.
Yeah, so we're starting to get, you know, week by week storylines again, which we haven't been getting for a while because of the Bunkhouse Stampedes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So now, you know, Garvin's fired up at the Midnight Express and Jimmy Cornette and all of that. So it was pretty good. We go to commercial, come back. Paul Jones and Rude and Bull are there to give a promo. And the best part of this promo, again, was Rick Rude. Obviously, he's the best promo of the three of these guys. And the best line I took away was when Rude looks over at Manny Fernandez and he's like, I think we could have a good time with $100,000, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I like that. That just shows Rude's personality coming in the form. It was beautiful.
So we do that. Then we got Brad Armstrong versus Tully Blanchard for the television title.
This 10-minute match was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what I really enjoyed about it, and maybe I just took a different view of it, this was a way to not to get yourself over in a loss. Mm-hmm. Because if you watch this match with, like, you know, fully invest yourself in it, Brad is rushing Tully. Brad is on full offensive. Tully gets maybe an offensive move once in a while, but then Brad is just regaining control the entire match. He's going for the quick covers, quick pins. Tully doesn't get his finish. Tully doesn't get, you know, any sustained offense. He tries to leave the ring. He tries to do everything, but then Brad is just working him over like crazy, and Tully's selling like crazy. I mean, and there's stuff in there too. Like, in my mind, when Brad whips him into the turnbuckle, and Tully like jumps out of the ring.
Because the flare bump. Like,
oh, that's a flare bump. But then I'm like, oh, look at JJ. JJ saying, oh, that should be the disqualification because, you know, that the announcer saying, you know, that match should be over because he threw him over the ring. And I'm thinking, whoa, wait a minute. If you watch that again, Tully kind of like propels himself over as if he's trying to escape and just get the DQ victory.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get him out and just, you know, trying to find a way to avoid having to wrestle Brad much longer. Everything Tully did in that match, you know, was perfectly done for a heel character.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, cowering, scampering away, trying to evade the last minute so that he couldn't get pinned, like, by leaving the area. I mean, it was just beautiful. And then it just shows that Tully is smart.
Yep.
Intelligent. He knows how to make good use of that 10-minute time limit. And meanwhile, Brad looks amazing because Tully's bumping around like as if he's a crash dummy.
I mean, Brad looks like a main eventer in that match.
Oh, it was beautiful. I mean, I love that match. Like, when you told me I'd have fun in this, I'm like, this must be what he's talking about because this match was incredible.
Yeah, I watched that match and I didn't write it move for move, but yeah, I took a lot of notes because it's great because Brad jump starts it, which is fantastic because Brad knows he's only got 10 minutes. He's got to beat Tully fast, you know. Yep.
And he is working it fast. It's not like that Barry Windham Flair match where, you know, Barry's, you know, he hits a move and he's kind of like, not moving. He's moving slowly because he's fatigued, obviously, but it's also kind of like very methodical. Mm-hmm. Brad is like, I knocked you down. I'm crawling over. I'm going for the cover as fast as possible.
Yeah. Brad is on fire right out of the gate.
Beautiful.
Yeah. They go to the outside and they fight on the outside of the ring, which never happens.
No, not on a Saturday night show.
Yeah. Brad gets in control. The other thing that you mentioned that I was like, you've got to, like, for people that are listening to this and go back and watch it, you got to watch JJ's face when the camera is on him throughout this match. Cause he makes it too. Cause he is so, like, when he's counting the money or when he's biting on his glasses or, you know what I mean? Because he's nervous. You know what I mean? He's playing right along with Tully in this. Holy crap, we didn't think this, you know, we didn't think this guy was this good. We didn't think he would get this close. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Tully sells great, lots of two counts. I liked it when Tully raked the eyes to get the advantage, but it doesn't last very long.
No, not at all.
The flare bump over the buckle was great. Brad gets dumped to the outside too. But finally, when he gets back in, he's got Tully on the ropes, and they announce that there's about 3 minutes left. And I was like, oh, damn, this is about to kick up. Which it was already pretty fast-paced whole match. But it really kicks in those last 3 minutes. Brad gets a two-count. Tully gets his foot on the ropes. 2 minutes left.
I like that scene right there because when Tully got his foot on the rope, what did Brad do? He tries to attack the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like that for two reasons. One, it shows that, you know, Brad is thinking. It's like, okay, you expose this part, I'm going after it. And two, when he missed, he didn't flop around like a fish, like someone, if they, you know, like in today's era, you miss a move and you're selling it as if you know, like you missed a drop kick.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, mm-hmm. He just missed it. He's like, yep, I'm just going to continue what I'm doing. Like he didn't no sell it. Like he didn't think he actually hit it.
Yeah.
He continued like, okay, well, I'm trying to rush this. If I miss, if I whiff, I'm going to go for another move. And he, it was just perfect. It was a great set. It was that little sequence was just perfect.
And then let's see. Oh, but Tully bails and Bragg goes out of the ring and goes and gets him and drags him back to the ring. You know what I mean? That hit the missile drop kick. But Tully, when he goes to pin him, he wasn't paying attention. Tully's arm is under the ropes.
Yeah.
Which and I was like, oh. And then, of course, he hits the Russian leg sweep right at the bell.
Yep. They can't even get the one count.
So he doesn't get the one count, but. You know, of course, again, just like with the Barry match, you got to think, oh, he would have had him. You know what I mean? He would have had him. And that's the type of, this is the type of match and the type of stuff that gets people coming back to see that match again, to see the babyface go over.
Yeah. And like I said, did a great job of establishing, it did a phenomenal job of establishing Brad as a threat to the TV title or any title, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it also got, it didn't make Tully look bad. Look at there are a lot of matches in this era where you lose, you just look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You win here, like he lost, but I mean he didn't win, but he got himself more over as a character. It didn't hurt him not to get the pin, and it didn't hurt. And you know,
this actually benefited both guys in a way.
It really did.
And
I'm sorry, I keep getting I'm getting a call like repeatedly. I gotta take this real fast, so I will be right back.
Okay. Well, there you go, folks. He's got to take a call. We are into it. Yeah, Brad getting the Russian leg sweep at the bell was great. Here's another thing. Tully, of course, officially the match ends up being a victory for Tully. So it's a loss for Brad, but it doesn't feel like a loss. It feels like a moral victory. Tully, for the other hand, it almost feels like a loss. But Tully is established enough as a champion and as a heel champion that he can kind of eat this because he's got it out. Brad didn't pin him. You know what I mean? He still officially won the match. Although it appears, if you watch the match, that Brad should have won the match. And this is the type of thing that they don't do anymore because there's no time limits. And that's another thing about today's presentation that kind of, I feel like it's lacking. I feel if there were more time limit matches, especially more like 10-minute, 15-minute time limit matches, and you could actually have it go the full 10 minutes, and you know that you reach the time limit, there's not actually a victor, then you can bring people back around again. You see what I'm saying? Whereas instead of having to do a screw finish or having somebody get beat clean or having somebody happen to cheat, you know, you can there with the time limit, that adds something else that you can work around. As far as, you know, getting a match that has an ending that's contestable without it being somebody's screw up, you know, it's just, you know, the time limit ran out. Then maybe, you know, if it was a 10 minute time limit, you do it at the end of the show the next week and it's, you know, TV time remaining, which is like 40 minutes or something. You put together 20 minutes, you put together a really good 20 minute match. Maybe there's a, you know, you do a screw finish in that one. And then you can come back at a pay-per-view and do a big time finish where, you know, there isn't a time limit or it's like a 60-minute time limit where, you know, you're definitely going to have a winner. Instead of, you know, screw finish, you know, somebody gets pinned clean or, you know, somebody gets caught cheating or something like that. It's just with the time limit, you have another option. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think that'd actually be very beneficial. I mean, like hear a little bit what you were talking about. I mean, it does avoid the whole, like if you have to have the meet, before a big match. Like, if you can't keep them apart, having them, you know, not having them go to time limit draws makes it more interesting. Because then it's like, okay, you give them 10 minutes of TV time. Let's put them on a PLE or, you know, or pay-per-view and see what they can do.
Yeah.
It draws you in because it's like, okay, well, you know, Dolph Ziggler couldn't beat The Miz in two matches so far with a 10-minute time limit and a 15. Now he's going to face him on a in a third match. Let's see what happens. I mean, yeah. It just gives you interest. I mean, it could be two times, one time. Even, you know, it draws it out. But if you keep having a match where, okay, Chad Gable's gotten pinned three times by Seth Rollins, and now they're going to face because Seth Rollins, you know, did it with a first he cheated to win. Then he, you know, used brass knucks. But then he, you know, had a handful of tights. Mm-hmm. No one's really gonna, it's overplayed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it gives your baby face like, okay, well, that's a great example. Chad Gable and Seth Rollins, right? Like, Seth's not a heel, but it gives an underneath guy a way to get momentum without having to pin or disqualify or make the champion or the top guy lose any face whatsoever.
Yes.
If Chad Gable goes 10 minutes with Seth Rollins in the ring and goes toe-to-toe with him and takes it to a time limit draw, that immediately gives Chad Gable momentum. And 100%. Seth doesn't lose an ounce of momentum in the process. So there you go. I mean,
it's amazing people don't book like that anymore. I mean, it works. Why they ran away from that, I'll never understand.
Because Vince doesn't like time limits.
Who cares what Vince likes?
We'll see if that's the thing, because since...
Yeah, but even Tony Khan doesn't do that.
For the past 20 years.
They have a TV title, I think, but they don't do it.
Well, yeah, because that's because Tony Khan, they couldn't have a 10-minute match in AEW for a title. Because nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to go and have a good 10-minute match. They all want to have these overblown, overproduced 20-minute matches. Just look at it. I mean, I should go through and start timing the AEW matches and how long they take. Because I'll guarantee you there's maybe one or two on the card every week that are under 10 minutes. It's ridiculous.
That's not a lot, no.
Because this is a 10-minute match.
And then they wonder why they can't put anybody... what's the word I'm looking for? Why they can't fit anybody on the card? Well, you're giving them 20, 30 minutes a match.
Mm-hmm.
Give them 5 minutes. They can do a lot with a little.
I mean, like we said, this was a 10-minute match. And this could have been a completely different match, structure-wise. You know what I mean? Because we've seen 10-minute matches that were completely different than this. But, you know, there's a lot you can do in 10 minutes, like you were saying. Have a 10-minute match. Keep it simple. Keep it basic. Everybody doesn't have to get all of their moves in. That's not the point. The moves in wrestling aren't the point. The moves in wrestling is... how does this help build my momentum? How does this get me, you know, me or my presentation to be seen as bigger? How does, you know, doing a 1,000 Cope con Hilo Tope Coronas isn't going to, because no one's going to remember that in 2 weeks. But boy, that time Brad Armstrong took Tully Blanchard to the 10-minute limit and he had him in the pin. He could have beaten him. People are going to remember that, you know, 2 or 3 months down the road.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I can't tell you what was done in the Cody Rhodes Brock Lesnar match where Brock tapped out Cody. But I can tell you, you know, it was a good match. I can tell you how Brock won. Do I remember every sequence and every cool spot that happened in the middle of the match? Nope.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the reality of the situation. You're not going to remember these things. You may have that one moment like where Mick Foley falls off Hell in a Cell and almost kills himself.
Well, yeah. You're going to remember.
That's a spectacle. That's not like, you're not going to remember the time. I mean, you will remember some things like where three idiots start doing leapfrog over each other for some stupid reason.
Well, yeah, but that's not a memory that you want people to have.
No, I mean, it's like, what, you know, they're just jumping around like idiots.
Yet another thing that old Don Stevens took down. Well, so, yeah, that's the thing with you're talking. Cody and Brock is a great example. You don't remember every single move in the match. You shouldn't be expected to. That's a Dave Meltzer thing. You know what I mean? That's almost like a gaslighting thing when you're like, oh, well, what moves did they do? It's like, you remember the big points in the match. You remember the turning points. You remember when the babyface starts their comeback. Usually, you remember big stuff. Because it's built to, like, when that moment when Cody hits Brock in the head with the cast and he's like, you know, you see it on his face, then he starts beating the shit out of Brock with the cast and Brock is selling all over the place. You remember that? Yeah. Because that's a big moment in the match. That's something that turned the tide for the good guy, the guy you want to win, you know? Mm-hmm. You remember Cody Rhodes getting to the ropes the first time. And then you remember him, you know, passing out. You remember, you know... It's you remember him hitting like three of those crossroads on Brock Lesnar and not being able to get the pin. It's, you know, but you got to build to that stuff. You can't just do it out of nowhere.
Exactly. Like if you just throw in those moves just for the sake of hitting a cool move, no one's going to care. Like
if it happens in a vacuum, does it happen?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
like I can't tell you what happened in the MJF. Darby Allin four pillars match thing. I know MJF won.
I couldn't tell you what happened because I didn't watch it.
I'm sure they did all sorts of crazy things. I'm sure there was like four or five coffin drops. I'm sure whatever Jungle Boys finishes, they hit that like 70 times. They spammed the hell out of it. But you know, it's like I can't tell you all that stuff. And I'm sure they're like they're proud of themselves, so they're thinking they're giving fans something to remember, but they're really not.
Oh yeah, well MJF is saying that was the greatest four way wrestling match ever.
Yeah, that's why he's a heel.
Yeah,
but again, as I said on Twitter, just because you say things that make you go like, "Oh wow, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe he would go there," that doesn't make you a heel. Heel to me makes me want to, you know, if I see you in the ring, I want to see you get beat up. I want to see you get what's coming to you. That's a heel.
Yeah, here's the thing.
Right now, Dom.
Oh yeah,
is the only one that's doing it. Maybe Matt Cardona, because whenever I see him, he just might have a punchable face. Because like, when I see him, I'm like really annoyed by him. Those are good heels.
Yeah, no. Cardona's doing a great job as a heel. Yeah. Everywhere he goes, he's a heel, and he's
in the bottle right now.
Yeah, Dom's doing a great job. I don't know if you saw the replay or whatever of the Adam Cole MJF. Back and forth in the ring. I didn't like it. Everybody's like praising it. Oh, it was this great shoot promo. I was like, no, it wasn't. It's the same sophomoric crap that MJF does every week. This is literally the same promo he cuts on everybody. He tells them how great he thinks they were, but now they suck. And it's like, well, if they suck now, why are they a contender? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't know if MJF doesn't get it, if no one has bothered to talk to him about this or tell him that when you completely tear down your opponent's credibility, it doesn't mean anything when you beat them.
No, 100%.
So, you know, and Adam Cole's just...
He's there.
I can't believe that we thought that this guy could be another Shawn Michaels. I can't, because like it's so phony now. Like he's playing a tough guy. And I'll be honest with you, any babyface worth their salt would have just punched MJF in the face after that promo. They wouldn't have asked for a microphone and calmly walked over and delivered more, you know, sports entertainment insults. No, they would have fucking punched him in the face.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we'll get to something like that here in a minute. So let's get back into the thing.
Like when you think of a heel, you think of somebody you want to see hit.
Yes.
Obviously, whatever he's saying isn't triggering Adam Cole enough to do anything. And to answer your question about the, why we thought he was the second coming of Shawn Michaels, the WWE machine was behind him.
Oh, yeah.
It goes a long way. Look at everybody who we thought was going to be big or we thought should have been given more. and you only find maybe a handful that have, surpassed expectations. Drew McIntyre, Matt Cardona, Bobby Lashley. These were guys who WWE kind of gave up on, or they just wanted to get rid of the WWE because they didn't think they were being used properly. I don't know what Bobby Lashley's deal was,
I think
but
he no no he went to UFC.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
Okay.
he actually fought. He was a big deal in UFC. He fought mixed martial arts for a while.
Oh, wow. Well, my point is, for every Drew McIntyre, for every Matt Cardona, you get an Idol Stevens, what was his name? Damian Mizdow. You get a guy who just, flames out. And then, or you get guys who think they're bigger than they are, like Tyrus. It's
Malachi
like,
Black.
yeah. It's, you need, WWE knows what they're doing when they're making stars. And when you're left to your own devices, it just goes nowhere.
Well, some of these, some of these guys I think could have been, they're not good on their own because they don't know how to get over, because nobody knows how to get over on their own anymore, because all there is the indies. You know what I mean? And on the indies, you're in a different town every night. All you got to do is get over that one night. You don't have to get over. You don't have to keep coming back and coming back and stay over and get over with an audience and have them care about you more than to pay for a ticket to see you wrestle. You see what I'm saying? Where so they don't know how to get over, and there's a certain way of getting over in the WWE, but the WWE is going to, like, especially in NXT, Triple H is going to give you every resource he can and do everything he can to get you over, or he would. You see what I'm saying? So a guy like Malachi Black probably had ideas that Triple H was saying no to in NXT, but he was still given the kind of the presentation he wanted, and he was used on top and presented the right way. Gets to the main roster, Vince doesn't understand him, flames out, gets let go due to COVID, right? Well, now he's in AEW, and Tony's going to book him however he wants to be booked and do whatever he wants to do. And he's just got a lot of bad ideas because he doesn't really know what he's doing because he's never had to learn. So I think, there's a lot of guys with talent that don't have very good ideas for booking or for presentation because that's really not their job. Shouldn't be their job. If you had a decent booker, you could get a lot more out of a lot of these guys that are on that roster. But anyway, speaking of getting a lot out of guys, I don't know. I don't know about that. We do get a promo from Dick Murdoch. Talks about having a Texas barbed wire match. That's all I wrote there. I was like, oh, what's the Texas barbed wire? Is that the one where they replace the ropes with barbed wire? Because that
That's my
sucks.
assumption.
Yeah. Either way, I'm not interested. Well, I mean, I probably would have been interested then because it would be such an anomaly. You'd never see anything like that. This week on AEW Dynamite, they had a no holds barred match on free television
Oh, good.
with the best, I think it
Sure.
was the Best Friends versus Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin.
Oh, okay.
So
Even
yeah,
better.
that was a bunch of garbage I fast forwarded through. Let's see, go to break, come back. We get a Jimmy Valiant promo. Always happy to see Jimmy Valiant. Apparently, Jimmy can't read, but he likes the fans to send him pictures. We're just going to leave that one sit where they are. And he says he loves all the people. What was that?
No, I said, I just said good.
Yeah. Let's see, Lex Luger versus Tommy Angel. JJ comes out, he's in Lex's corner, which is, again, continuity. We're continuing this storyline. The crowd's shouting, "We want Barry." Lex puts Tommy Angel in the torture rack, gets the win. They come out to do the promo. JJ puts over Lex, and then Lex says that Lex is an associate, said that he's a friend of the Four Horsemen. So, yeah, the plot thickens on that one. I thought that was a really good way to do that, though.
I agree. And all I can, the one thing I've noticed is that every time Luger's in WCW, until he finally won that world championship, he was always an associate of something, whether it was an associate of the Dungeon of Doom or the Alliance and Hulkamania or the Horsemen. He was always finding himself managed by a heel manager and the associate. That was like his go-to role. But I thought it was good. I thought, you know, that I thought him being, you know, not officially named the Horseman was well explained by JJ. I thought, you know, they basically said, you know, we want him on our side. We just don't need him as a horseman right now. And then Luger saying, "No, this is the first step into where I'm going with this, my career." That was great. Like, it shows that he was, you know, satisfied for the time being. Like, he's
Not
just biding his time, and I like that.
satisfied, but definitely like, I see what you're saying. Happy about his
Happy where
situation at
things
the
are
moment.
going. He's not at the fin he's not at the end, but he's just, you know, he's where he should be.
So we get a they go to break, come back, Baron von Raschke develops a promo, issues an open challenge, which I thought was nice. I was like, because he's like, I've got a contract. Anybody else wants to sign it, I'll face you in the ring. And then he challenges Paul Jones, which I was like, well, that would make sense since Raschke was originally part of Paul Jones's army and then left Paul Jones because Paul Jones had been promising him title matches and he never got a title match. So now he wants to fight Paul Jones. Like, so that's a very logical progression. And again, this is one of those storylines you don't have to see every week because it doesn't really matter because it's so underneath, so undercard that it doesn't really matter if you remember any of this or not. You know, Raschke kind of just says he wants to fight Paul Jones. And you're like, okay, that's cool. We get Rick and Ollie versus Tim Horner and somebody else. I don't remember who the other guy's name was.
Same. You know, it's funny. I really liked. I really liked, but I was really thrown off by the whole like Flair teaming with Ole Anderson. I'm like, really? That's a thing? That just caught me off guard.
Well, it's funny, you know, Rick originally came in as a cousin of the Andersons.
Really? I did not know that.
That's how he got associated with Arn and Ollie. And then they were just palling around with Tully. That's how the whole Four Horsemen thing came together.
Really?
Is they were all just guys that just hung out. You know, well, I mean, Rick, of course, was, you know, an Anderson cousin. So because the Andersons had his back. So they would come out with him a lot and kind of play, not manager, but, you know, run interference during matches for him and stuff. And then Tully, I forget exactly how Tully got involved in it, other than the fact that Tully was like the. Maybe the he wasn't a television champion. He might have been like the North American champion or something like that, at that time. And then, or no, maybe he was the television champ. I don't remember what championship Tully had. But at one point, it was Rick was the champion. Arn and Ollie were the tag team champions, and Tully was, you know, one of the secondary singles championships. So that's when they started calling themselves the Four Horsemen. Well, Arn started calling them the Four Horsemen of wrestling, and then they just kept doing it, and it just stuck because they all got along and they all hung out together. Well, except for Ollie, but anyway, sorry. That's why I wasn't as taken aback by Rick and Ollie teaming together, I guess. Anyway, end of the match. Ollie was having trouble with Tim Horner at first, so Tim got to shine for a little bit till Ollie shut him down. Flair was being Flair through most of the match. When he was on offense, he was showboating. When he was on defense, he was backing up, like just like a good heel champion should. Then when they got control, good double team and healing by both of them. I like, you know, of course, every time. Somebody, you know, every time there's a tag, you get that opportunity for a double team, you need to take advantage of it. Horner gets a hot tag and a comeback, but they shut it down. And then Flair goes off. I mean, Flair, like, I don't think I've ever seen Flair move that angrily
Quickly,
or quickly around the ring in my life. Like, he was on top of Horner like white on rice. You know what I mean? Ollie comes off the top rope onto the arm and then arm bar submission and a tap. And that was it. That's all she wrote for Tim Horner and, you know, his jobber buddy. But again, a good match, good tag team match by Rick and Ole. Nice to see Flair work a tag team match because he doesn't, you know, we don't get to see him that much it wrestle anyway.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a better tag team wrestler than you would think. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember his matches with Arn in the, you know, Nitro era. And I thought that, I always thought that was good stuff.
Yep. So let's see. So we go. Yeah, we get done with that, and then we come back, and we got Lex, we go back to the podium where Lex and JJ are doing a promo. And this is where, when I was talking about Adam Cole hitting MJF,
mm-hmm.
here Barry comes out, and he's talking to Lex, and he's like, listen, I'm just going to give you one last chance. You don't want to do this. And JJ gets up in his face and starts mouthing off to him. And Barry grabs JJ by the tie and then by the lapels and starts yelling at him. And I'm like, that's what a baby face does. When somebody gets in their face and pushes them too far, of course, then Lex attacks Barry and beats the crap out of him. And Horner,
which
Garvin,
I'm happy about,
and Brad make the save. What was that?
I was happy about that because how many times can Barry come out there and not get, you know, and just... I mean, how many times can we keep seeing the whole thing of Barry saying you shouldn't be with the horsemen? You shouldn't be with the horsemen. I'm just glad it finally got a payoff where Luger just basically annihilates him. And then JJ got some good hits in there too.
The law of threes.
Yep.
The first two times he did it, nothing happened. The third time he did it, Lex beat him up.
Well timed and everything. Gave a good reason. There was a, you know, it wasn't like Luger just attacked him for the sake of attacking him. It was, you put your hands on my associate. You put your hands on my business partner.
Yeah. Well,
so now things are going down.
Makes him look better in the eyes of the horseman too. And anything to do that.
Yep.
Hold on a second. I got to grab some more water.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So,
sorry, I did the same thing too because I don't know what's happening. I'm like a coughing fit.
No, yeah, I've got a sore throat, or not a sore throat, but my mouth gets dry when I'm talking.
Gotcha.
And since I'm not really drinking any beers or anything tonight. I'm just down in water like it's going out of style. So we get Ivan Koloff and Vladimir Petrov. Is it Ivan? Yeah, it's Koloff, right? Nikita Koloff. Yeah, Koloff.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I always get Koloff and Volkov confused for some reason. So I'm like, no, it's not Nikolai Volkov. It's Ivan Koloff. So it's Ivan and Vlad doing a promo. Ivan, of course, accuses Nikita of hiding from Vlad. And then says that they're out to hurt Dusty. That hurting Dusty is their goal. Again, mm-hmm. I mean, it's Ivan. It's a good promo. He gets to the point. He talks about, he delivers fake stories from Russia, which sound believable. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that time that you could only lift 550 pounds four times, but Vladimir did it five times. And then you come back next week and you do it six times. Like, it's good shit because it sounds real, especially with two people who grew up competing against each other.
Oh, 100%.
So let's see. Then we get Vlad versus Zane Smith. He gets better every week. I'm sorry.
He does. I will say that. He is improving.
So,
I mean, the Russian sickle hammer? What's it called?
The hammer off the second rope.
Yeah, it's not. This is a bad finisher. I don't think anyone can make that look good.
I really don't. I don't think so either.
I think I was, you know, I was getting hard on him, but then the more I watched, I'm like, oh, it's not a clothesline. It's like a choke hold.
Yeah.
But he grabs him in the midair. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to fault him too much because that's definitely a, you know, it's a hard move.
I mean,
I don't know who told him to do that move, but it's hard.
Well, it's one of Ivan's moves because Ivan does the Russian hammer, but he does it from the ground.
Okay. That's what I thought. This is like a modified one, supposed to be more devastating, I guess. Yes.
But Ivan's looks fantastic because he grabs a guy and in one motion puts him on the ground. Like almost like it looks like he's like just slamming the guy down by his throat. Like it's very vicious looking. But it's hard. I mean, Ivan's been doing that for, you know, at this point, what, 20 years?
Yeah, decades at that point.
You know, so you can't, I don't know if that's a move that Vladimir's ever going to be able to pick up completely.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know what happens to this guy after this run. Because I don't remember him being around for very long. Anyway, let's see. Then we get Nikita and Dusty come out and do a promo. And Nikita's sick of the Four Horsemen. And then Dusty talks about how Lex, if you're going to be in the Four Horsemen, then you're going to take the same butt whoopings that they take. Which... nobody's been giving the Four Horsemen very many butt whoopings, so I don't know exactly what he's talking about. You know, seems like the most of the people getting beat up are people talking about the Horsemen, not the Horsemen
about
themselves.
Wanting to beat up Horsemen. Yeah,
yeah.
I haven't seen them get their comeuppance yet, but I'm sure it's coming. It's got to be coming.
So then we get Bull and Rude versus Rocky King, and I forget what the other guy's name was. Rocky King got some offense in the beginning, so that was nice. I like Rude picking him up off the pin where he could have pinned him, but he picks him up. Yeah. Manny Fernandez was actually being aggressive in this match and working faster, which I think looks a lot better than when he's methodical.
Yes, I agree. he was on fire tonight. Even his promo was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was engaged for some reason in this show. He wasn't just going through the motions.
Go. And then I don't remember who the second jobber's name was, but he was really good too because he sold everything really well.
I know who you're talking about. I don't know his name, but I remember that.
Because I was just like, God damn, like he's perfect. Like when what was it? I forget what it was. I think Rude like bounced his head off of the corner and then he kind of like went up and then kind of slumped in the corner again, like give me another one, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like little things like that where it's like, or like when he would go down but he'd leave an arm up so that the heel could just grab his arm and jerk him back up without having to bend down, like little things like that. I was like, this guy actually knows how to be a jobber.
Imagine that.
But let's see. Then we go to commercial, come back. Cornette does the intro for the Midnight and Midnight versus Vernon Deaton and Darren Stevens. And of course, Cornette's making Bewitched jokes the whole time. Let's see. We got Cornette talking about the conspiracy. Then he talks about Bill Mahlke being injured at the hands of Big Bubba. They say they're going to put Ronnie Garvin out of wrestling. All of this while the match is going on. I couldn't pay attention to either because Cornette's going a mile a minute.
I was trying to listen more to Cornette because it was fun.
I'm trying to watch the match to see what's going on. But they hit the Vegematic again. This time the proper... Well, no, this wasn't the proper version.
No, this was not, no.
Because Bobby hit the knee instead of the leg drop.
Yeah. I will say this. I love how every week for the last like 4 or 5 weeks, whether it was in a six-man tag or a traditional tag, the Midnight Express is using a different finish every single time. And it's just, it does so much. It's like showing you they can beat you in any way. And you have to be, if you're going to go up against them, you got to be prepared for like various holds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, I like that. I know we talk about it a lot, but I mean, it's just a great thing to see.
Well, and it's another one of those things. You never know if doing that makes you think, well, you never know what move the match is going to end on.
Yeah.
You know? Like we talked about with Gunther, you know,
oh, yeah.
You know, if you have three or four moves that, you know, you beat people with, then that creates more doubt in people's minds of what the finish to the match is actually going to be, which is kind of part of the whole point of wrestling is to not have people figure out the finish before it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. That's why AJ Styles has the Styles Clash and the Phenomenal Forearm and the calf crusher. Although I did, there was one match. It was right before they were going to Saudi, I think. It was AJ versus Daniel Bryan for the WWE title.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that AJ was going to win with the calf crusher about 2 minutes into the match because he started working Danielson's legs.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, he's winning with the calf crusher right here. But anyway, let's see. We get a Flair promo. He puts Luger over. He plugs their future events. He says that Barry, I love this part. This is great. He's like, Barry, all you got to do is pin me. Just pin the world champion. That's all you got to do. I was like, oh, just come on. Pin Slick Rick.
Good luck. Good luck.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, Space Mountain is looking for auditions, is holding auditions. And then he gave Tony $500.
Just because.
Well, he wanted him to get a new jacket.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying just because. It's just randomly.
Well, see, here's
the thing.
He's
never done that before, I don't think.
I wonder. I think I've actually seen him do give Tony money on air before. I don't know if Tony keeps the money. Like, do you think Flair's just like really just giving him money?
I could see that being the case. I really could. I could see Flair be like, nope, you got to keep it. We're not picking character.
I mean, I can fully see Flair just giving Tony money just because he likes him. And and Flair's like, that is one of the things, you know, you got to say about Flair is when apparently when he had money, he spread it around.
Yeah. Cause he was the giving tree.
He was always buying people's drinks and buying people's dinners and, you know, people out because, you know, Flair likes to show off. You can always count on him to do that. Let's see. We go to break, come back. We get another. This is the last couple segments. So we get the JJ promo basically saying that he likes Luger because Luger has had the tenacity or whatever, was brave enough to say that he wants to be a horseman. You know what I mean? And to be good enough to be a horseman and to know that he wants to be. But then Tim Horner comes out and interrupts him. And then Horner ends up being Barry's replacement in the match because it's supposed to be Barry Windham versus Arn Anderson, but mm-hmm. Tim Horner replaces him. So now it's Horner versus Arn. They're talking about this being gut check time for Barry, that Barry's still recovering in the back. Arn's super aggressive in this match, but then Barry does a run in and everybody bails and. Because he doesn't really get much on Arn, does he? I thought he pretty much got a couple shots and then Arn bailed, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then Barry does a promo talking about Lex has made his bed. He's going to have to lay in it, which I thought was a fantastic way to put it. You know, now you've made an enemy of me. So now we've got Barry going up against, you know, Barry has shifted his direction from Ric Flair to Lex Luger. You see what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I love how they very slyly did this where they had Barry in a program with Flair and now it's kind of slid over to Barry being in a program with Lex.
Yep.
Cornette comes out and delivers a promo with the Midnight talking about we're going to be the top seed in the Crockett Cup, which is coming up. They do a VTR of the Midnight Express attacking Ronnie Garvin. Mm-hmm. Breaks up the fight in the VTR before they can get the finish, which they were going to drop. It looked like somebody was going to come off the top rope with a chair onto Ronnie Garvin's neck, which did not look like it would have ended well, even if they had gotten it perfect. I like that Cornette says, we're going to get you hot enough to put those tag titles on the line. Which, for those of you in the know, is a little a clue there, but we'll just leave that where it's at. I just put Cornette was on it. This was a great Jim Cornette. He was red in the face and just like absolutely almost shaken by the end of this promo. It's fantastic. Good stuff. Did you have anything to add?
No, you covered that one pretty well.
As opposed to all the ones I don't cover very well.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so we go to commercial, come back. this is the last segment, so you know they're just killing time here. JJ and Tully do a promo, and Tully talks about we're the best at doing what we do. And then they do, they rerun the VTR of Lex and Barry getting in the fight earlier.
Yeah.
The rest of the horsemen come out except Ollie.
Which is weird because, you know, he was there because he worked that tag match.
Mm-hmm. And then Arn starts wrapping it up, and then everybody puts their hands in the middle and says horsemen, and Lex puts his hand in the middle.
I think JJ encouraged him, right? Or yeah, somebody encouraged him.
I think Rick did. It was Rick or JJ. One of them said, yeah, put your hand
in. I know it wasn't Arn.
So there you have it. A little teaser there at the end. Lex with the horseman, with Ollie not in the picture. And that was the end of that episode. Again, another fantastically well-booked episode. Thank you, Virgil Runnels, whoever that guy is.
Whoever he is, he did a great job.
Yeah. But no, it's just, it's nice to get back to the episodic nature of it and to have these storylines, you know, continue, because they're, you know, there's actually stuff going on again. Yep. Because that period between Starrcade and the beginning of the year was kind of like, what's going on? Like, there wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, it just felt like the same storylines were continuing with nothing really new happening. And now we've got Barry and Lex, Ron Garvin and the Midnight Express. Although, like, Barry's going to have to help defend those titles too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot of stuff up in the air.
Right.
So that's fantastic stuff. Good stuff. Good times. Anything else?
You were right. That was a good show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, you know, like going into that, I was very pleasantly surprised. I don't think there was any, there was no real squash match, except maybe the first one with Garvin and Precious.
But
everything seemed pretty competitive.
Well, so, I mean,
I'm not a big fan of squash matches. I get that you need them because you need to get over talent, but there's, you know, like, they did a lot with some of these matches. They got everybody over. They still got a lot of people involved in the show, and, you know, they weren't putting on like 20-30 minute matches, and they were still pretty good.
You know, the Lex had a squash match against Tommy Angel.
Maybe two squash matches.
Vlad had a squash match.
You just want to correct me.
No, I'm just looking through
it didn't feel like squash matches, though, and everything felt like a good pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did, and there really wasn't. There was only about the three, really, if you really look at it. Well, I mean, Rick and Ollie was a squash match, but it lasted for a while, and everything was a little bit more fast-paced this episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
agreed.
Like, even the squash matches, the guys that were in there were aggressive, and they were actually going after it, and it didn't... Because, you know, that was my problem a few weeks ago, is just kind of plotting. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, this was pretty good. So, it was a damn good match. Unfortunately, next week... Oh, wait, we have to see what our... how many people watched. Yes, we gotta look at our views here. Oh, and for those of you in the state of Florida who might be in need of a lawyer, we have a lawyer on retainer. Back to the Ring does. Well, he's not really on retainer because we don't pay him anything, but don't tell him that. what's the name of the new Twitter handle?
Yeah, the new Twitter handle. I got to remember that now. It took me forever to learn this one. Okay, let's see. It is... Where are you? I'm going to have to change this handle because it's not really one you can say out loud because it doesn't make any sense. It's the Defs Attorney. It's THEDEFS Attorney at Twitter. Mm-hmm. We're going to revamp that because we need something better. But it's look for me as the Defendant's Attorney.
There you go. The Defendant's Attorney. Our good friend, Rob the Lawyer, my co-host, the man who The man who jumped in to help me when I was having issues with the podcast stealing my gimmick.
You know, it's funny, when I was looking for your name on the other account, I saw the old podcast, the other podcast.
They don't do anything. I didn't click on it
to see. I don't think they've done anything new since we talked to them, or since you talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
But their name is still in the Twitterverse.
Oh yeah, it probably always will be. But
yeah.
I think it's, what's really funny is that their lawyer was so, their guy, their legal guy, quote unquote, was so snarky with me, and like, for a podcast that's literally just an account that retweets another podcast that doesn't get any views.
Yeah.
So, not that we do. We have another 4 views this week.
Ooh, 4. You know, I think as we get less, you know, as we cut time down a little bit, like, this was a fast show, I think.
Yeah, we're at an hour and a half right now. So
yeah, I think we make it more digestible to want to watch it more.
So, yeah, we had 2. Yep, so there you go. We've had 4. The last episode has 4 plays. So we've gotten 4 plays the past 2 weeks, down from 7 for the January, you know,
we gotta be 3rd consistent. And 10th. That's what it is. It's like the whole TikTok thing. You got to be consistent, put out the product, and make it digestible.
There you go.
So we're going to be doing that.
Well, we will be off next week. We are going to take a week off because I am going to the beach and I won't be back till Thursday. And I'm not going to be taking notes on a pay-per-view while I'm there. So next, not in 2 weeks, that will be the, hold on, let me look here. So I got to see. Yes, I know, folks, this is the most entertaining part of the show. So somewhere next week, the week of the 21st to 22nd, we will be recording a brand new episode, and we will be doing Survivor Series, I believe, 2001. So that will be, I've already watched it once. I was a little drunk when I watched it.
Did it make it better?
Well, it's the culmination of the invasion angle. So this is, you know, the Alliance, or whatever you want to call it, the ECW, WWE, or WCW angle versus the WWE angle. So it is what it is. It's a thing that happened. I don't really, I remember parts, some of the matches being fairly decent. So we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see if we like it. We'll see if we don't like it, but maybe it'll boost us up a little bit. Anyway, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, I have been Dr. Bob. He is Rob the Lawyer. Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at The Real Pinoy Rob, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Or at Back to the Ring, our the podcast headquarters on Twitter, which is also basically my Twitter handle now because I barely use the old one. And if you got any questions, comments, concerns, don't forget to reach out. Hope you guys have a great night. And the words of our good friend Arn Anderson, it's been your pleasure. Goodbye.